Washington State and Colorado have established the world's first legal and state-regulated marijuana industries, and in doing so, have carried out one of the most remarkable about-faces in American history. The new book, Weed the People, traces the history and legalization of marijuana in the United States and investigates the question, have the past 75 years of marijuana prohibition been wholly unnecessary, or are we deluding ourselves about the harm that we're about to unleash? Author, journalist, and industry expert Bruce Barcott is a Guggenheim Fellow in Nonfiction and chronicles how marijuana is changing from a demonized drug to a medicine and mild intoxicant. Again, the title of the book is Weed the People, a chronicle of how America changed its mind about marijuana. And we welcome Bruce Barcott to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you here. I find your story interesting. You live in Washington State, and you voted for legalization in 2012, but as you note, it was somewhat reluctantly.
It was. You know, I was a real skeptic going in. I sort of held my nose and voted yes. I turned my vote to a yes vote at the last minute. A friend of mine convinced me that, you know, there was more to this than my own like or dislike of marijuana. It was really a civil rights, social justice issue. And really, the next morning I woke up and saw that we had legalized pot, and I wondered, what in the world did we just do? And I really kind of spent the next 2 years trying to answer that question.
Do you think, and we'll get into this obviously in much more detail, mm-hmm. but do you think in a general sense, as of right now, 2 years out, we fully know the answer to those questions?
I think we're getting there. I think that 2 years out, you know, really, the fabric of society has not frayed here in Washington, nor in Colorado, and that was, you know, one of the big fears going in for myself and a lot of other voters was that, you know, would we see a spike in crime rates? Would we see addiction rates go up? Would we see more use among kids? And so far, none of those things have happened. You know, mainly the main change, and it's sort of an invisible one, is that we no longer arrest around 12,000 people every year for having marijuana. And in our day-to-day lives, things really go on as they have gone on before.
You also point out in the book, and something that I want to focus on for a moment, is that Colorado and Washington have basically done the same thing, but their models are very different.
Yeah. Colorado went in having already set up a framework for regulating marijuana. They had regulated their medical marijuana system a few years earlier, so they basically issued the first over 21 retail licenses to the people, the owners, the entrepreneurs, who they knew were already good actors in that space. So their system was sort of up and running from day one, January 1st of 2014. In Washington, my home state, we hadn't regulated medical marijuana, and we basically gave out our licenses for retail, adult retail use through a lottery system, and that really has had a lot of problems attached to it. One of the main things being that a lot of people who won those licenses had no experience in any sort of business. They had no experience with marijuana, and so they really were not able to get any shops up and running. We have probably about still two-thirds of the licenses out there have resulted in actually no shops. We have about 100 shops open, but we plan for about 300.
So what does that, if you're an outside state then, looking at how Washington and Colorado are dealing with this, and this goes back to the earlier question of 2 years out, what do we know for sure? Does there seem to be some learning as you go as to, okay, well, maybe this is the way we want to proceed?
Yeah, absolutely. I sort of liken it to software releases. You know, we're dealing right now with the beta version of these laws, and hopefully Oregon and Alaska, who are coming online soon, will have the 1.0 version, and maybe, you know, if California legalizes, that'll be the 2.0 version with all the bugs worked out. Yeah, there are a lot of kinks in the system right now. We're still dealing with edibles, you know, and trying to figure out what the right dosage is there and how to package them correctly and inform customers about what they're buying, because there have been problems with edibles in Colorado and in here in Washington State. But we're, you know, we're able to tinker with the law to change it, to adjust it, and make it better. You know, our state legislature right now is are voting on changes in the law as we speak. So there are ways to adjust it and make it better. But going in, the system isn't perfect, but I think we are making it better every year.
What do you think got us to this point? Because not that long ago, we were dead set against this. There was a war on drugs. Nancy Reagan was on Different Strokes, for goodness sakes.
Oh, yeah. I am a member of the Just Say No generation. I came of age in the 80s.
Me too.
And the idea of legalizing pot would have seemed absurd to me for most of my life. Two things really I think are driving this. One is the increased access to information we have now, thanks to this thing called the internet. We have not only sort of histories and narratives that run counter to the federal government's line, but we have access to all these scientific and medical studies that are out there, and we can read them for ourselves and decide whether, you know, this is as dangerous as the government claims or it's not. The other part that has happened is experience. You know, California first legalized medical marijuana back in 1996, so we have almost 20 years of experience with this sort of pilot project, this half step toward legalization that has, you know, resulted not in the downfall of the state of California or in the 22 other states that have legalized medical marijuana, but they seem to be able to handle it and do okay with it. So I think that has opened up a lot of voters' minds to perhaps taking that next half step toward full adult use legalization.
You talk about these steps and half steps, and it is interesting because you talk about this in the book of how longtime pot growers are converting to legal practices and what that's like, and the people who are getting in on the business fresh and people who have been at it for a long time.
Yeah, there are a number of people, you know, I went out and interviewed them for my book, you know, old school pot growers who used to, you know, grow in clandestine houses and would, you know, scurry around moving their product early Sunday mornings when they told me if we figured that's when the cops were at church or sleeping. And now they've applied for licenses. They're coming above ground. They're building actual grow houses and employing people. The other part of that is, you know, we've seen a reduction in Mexican cartel marijuana. You know, the folks down below the border, the criminal element down there is basically moving away from marijuana because they can't compete up here. And we've also seen a reduction in illegal grows on public lands and in national forests and national parks and this sort of thing. So that was one of the hopes, and I think it actually is coming to fruition now.
You talk about this, we mentioned the war on drugs, and obviously there were so many an increase in marijuana-related arrests. And so what are you seeing in Washington, what is Colorado seeing when it comes to the arrests, the decrease with the legalization? Is that penchant for criminal behavior being funneled somewhere else?
I don't think so. We haven't seen a spike in crime rates. In fact, the crime rate in Denver dropped significantly the first year that marijuana was fully legalized. And I don't think there's a one-to-one causal effect there going on. It's more, I think, the fact that marijuana is not tied to other crimes. And we've seen essentially a zero blip in the crime rate here in Washington State. So what the only thing that's different is that we're just no longer arresting people and criminalizing this act of obtaining, holding, and using in private marijuana. So we're no longer dragging a whole lot of people into the jail system, into the criminal justice system, who really don't need to be there. And that was one of the things that, you know, originally turned my vote, was I thought, you know what, we're turning too many people into criminals who really aren't criminals. They're just using this sort of mild intoxicant, and a lot of them are using it in a fairly responsible way.
Bruce Barcott is our guest. His book is Weed the People, the future of legal marijuana in America. Let us talk for a moment about what this means for medical practices and the fact of what legalization means for medical practices, as well as for research and funding and the increased funding and the necessity of that for the effects of marijuana. Where are we on that?
We are in desperate need of hard scientific data on marijuana, how it affects the body, how it affects the mind. Really, part of the war on drugs has been for decades a ratcheting down on the ability of scientists to legitimately study marijuana. It's actually more difficult still to study marijuana in a legitimate lab than it is to study heroin, cocaine, meth, or any other, you know, far more dangerous drug. And that's that. Some people are trying to change that, but it is a difficult process to unravel. I think we're seeing a little bit of progress now in terms of the federal government being more open to studies, not just of marijuana's harm, but the healing aspects of the drug as well. I mean, there are a lot of anecdotal reports out there and some scientific evidence, mostly from outside the U.S., about its great use and benefit in patients who are dealing with epilepsy, with PTSD, with chronic pain, with a number of you know, very serious but specific maladies. It's not a cure all by any means, but for some people it actually seems to help.
Do you think that legalization ultimately will help that, because more will want to know, followed very closely?
Yeah, I think so, and more, you know, more really need to know. I think it's not just the case that, you know, folks with epilepsy or veterans dealing with PTSD just are happy to go out and use this drug and you know, feel pleasantly high. They really are kind of trying to figure out what the best dosage is, how they should use it, how they should use it safely. And that science, those studies really aren't generally out there. I've talked to a number of doctors here in Washington State and in Colorado, and they, you know, sincerely want to help their patients. But there's still a lot of gray area and real questions surrounding the ethics of talking with people about marijuana, the legality of it, you know, whether they would be putting their licenses at risk. And that's all because it is still, of course, federally illegal.
So there are the critics who say that, well, maybe we should get some of this worked out as to what medically this does to us before we legalize it.
And, you know, that's a perfectly legitimate response. At the same time, I would say, if that is the case, let the scientists, let the medical researchers go after that and really try to figure it out. But what we're doing now is, right now, we have made it federally illegal to use, but we've also made it essentially federally illegal to study, which just makes no sense whatsoever.
Where is the money going? For the people who are making money on this, where is it going?
Funny, you know, so many people, when I talk to them about this subject, assume that, you know, there are marijuana millionaires being minted every day. And there are a few, and I emphasize few, marijuana millionaires, but it's very easy to lose money in this market. It's not just the fact, you know, you don't just open up a retail shop and have the droves coming to your store. So, you know, a certain amount, a high percentage of the money is actually going to states in the form of taxes. I mean, the taxes on marijuana in both states are in the 25 to 28% range. Even so, you know, with that high tax, I've been asked, you know, are we going to eventually be able to balance the federal budget based on pot taxes? And I said, no. It's a tiny drop in the bucket, even at the level of the state budget. So the states are seeing, you know, some money from this, but really, it's not an enormous windfall.
Would it be money that in future states and in future legislation that could go in some small way, maybe a larger way, to what we were talking about earlier of studying it more?
Yeah. In fact, you know, I think Colorado has a really good model where they have got some of this money earmarked for study, for scientific research. They just announced a couple months ago that they've got $9 million going into studies around the state. They've got about 9 or 10 studies that are just in the early stages of starting up right now. And they've also earmarked part of that money for education and prevention. You know, part of that money is going to make sure that marijuana stays out of the hands of young people, and that we talk with young people, not just in terms of scare tactics, as we have in the past, but try to educate them a little bit about the science and the real reasons why we want to keep it out of their hands and out of their lungs until they're past 21.
You do make the point in the book that this conversation between parents and kids about legalization and legal marijuana ultimately is you believe to be one of the best benefits of legalization is that this conversation is forced. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was one of my great trepidations, both going into legalization and writing this book. It's like, okay, I'm gonna have to have this conversation about pot with my kids, which, you know, really no parent looks forward to. But honestly, the more I was forced to talk with my kids about pot, the better it got. You know, I thought I'd do all this research and at the end of the day come up with this great 1-hour-long lecture with a PowerPoint and, you know, point out all the reasons they shouldn't use it. But what happened was we just started talking about it, and it became this rolling series of conversations that really hasn't stopped. You know, it happens on the way to school, over dinner now and then. And because of the research I've done in the book, I'm able to talk with them about, you know, the ways the developing brain is impacted by marijuana, the risk for schizophrenia, all these sorts of things, and the reasons why a person under 21, you know, is hit by marijuana differently than a person over 21.
I want to talk two big issues as we wrap up our conversation. Mm-hmm. One of them is just cultural, because and I have not been to Colorado or Washington since this legislation has passed and has been put into effect. Mm-hmm. But there is an interest on my end of living in New York State of just culturally, what is it like? Because we think nothing of if we're driving by the supermarket and we see our neighbor go in, or to the liquor store and see them come out with a bottle of wine or a six pack of beer. Do we culturally think of it different if we see them walk into the pot shop?
It is different. You know, we dropped many of the legal strictures against marijuana in my home state of Washington and in Colorado, but those social strictures are strong. Those social rules are still in place, and they change a little more slowly. You know, my first time in a medical marijuana dispensary was sort of a freakout session for me. You know, I'm 48 years old, and going in there and seeing this legal product, I started sweating. I wanted to just, you know, buy something and get out of there as fast as possible. But now, you know, going into an adult use store here in Seattle, it's a much more sort of normal experience. There are other people from all walks of life. You know, it's not just a bunch of you know, dudes with caps in their 20s in there. And it is becoming a little more normal, the purchasing aspect of it. The use, we're still trying to figure out, you know, when is it really appropriate and when is it not appropriate? There are all these places we can use alcohol, from the ballpark to a glass of wine over dinner. But for marijuana, those, you know, socially acceptable places are going to have to work out, and that's just going to take time.
Right. So, you know, do you bring it to the party? Do you bring it to the bridal shower? What do you do?
It all depends. You know, for myself and my peers here, basically, you know, the number one rule is, look, if there's going to be kids around, don't bring it. Don't bring it out. If there's if you're among friends who, you know, are comfortable around it, I think it's going to be okay to bring it around and offer it. Edibles are a problem because you need to let everybody know essentially how much pot is in a bite, because things can go wrong if people aren't aware and they take too much. But it really, you know, I was at a party recently and somebody offered to bring something along, and I said, you know, I'm not hosting this party, so what we've got to do here is we've got to check with the host. It's their house. They know the situation, and we've got to check in and see if it's okay with them. And really that's the rule, is be polite, check with people, communicate, you know, and if there's a question, just hold off.
Do you feel, so I'm asking you a personal question, and if you, mm-hmm. and if you wish to pass on it, that's,
sure.
that's fine,
sure.
but non-related to the investigation for the book, so mm-hmm. have you walked into a shop to buy pot?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was in, there's a shop called Uncle Ike's here in Seattle. I was there about 6 weeks ago, and I bought a tin of little edibles. They're sort of micro doses, 5 milligrams, and if I, you know, take one of those, it's like having a half a glass of wine for me. I don't use a lot of it. That tin will probably last me a couple of years.
Yeah.
And the same thing with, you know, I bought a gram of marijuana, and that will probably last me 3 months. I'm not a connoisseur. I'm not a big fan of marijuana, but, you know, every once in a while, for me it's rare, it can be a fun experience with the right person in moderation.
So in just the again, this gets back to the cultural stuff, but when you're in that line and you're buying it, I mean, do you turn back to the, you know, the 17-year-old kid buying condoms at the grocery store?
At first, it can be like that. Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'm, you know, the first time I did it, I looked over my shoulder and I was making sure nobody I knew saw me going in or coming out, you know, and it is a little unnerving. But I think it may be a generational thing where, you know, people in middle age like myself, it's a little freaky. But for people in their 20s, I think it's going to be, it's already a normal activity. And also, you know, the idea that once you go into the shop and you see that there are men and women of all ages, you know, all backgrounds in there purchasing, it makes it a little less of a freaky experience.
So final issue, and that is what impact this could have on the 2016 elections. Many states are going to be looking at this. Legislation will be put up for votes. And here is legislation that is thought to appeal to younger voters. So can it have an effect?
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the reasons that 2016 is looking to be a big year for legalization is that there is a pretty heavy line of thought among people who are in the legalization camp that you need a presidential election to pass this. Now, Alaska and Oregon didn't need it, but when the presidential election comes around, the youth vote just turns out in ways that they do not turn out for elections in the rest of the 4 years. So that's one impact. Also, you know, California, it's going to be on the ballot there. It's going to be hugely symbolic there. And you know, it's not just a Democrat Republican issue anymore. You know, Rand Paul is a Republican who's, if not totally in favor, at least, you know, he has sponsored legislation to make medical marijuana federally legal in states that have adopted it. So it's going to be a really interesting issue. I don't think it'll be a primary issue, but it will be there definitely in the background of the next election.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is Weed the People, The Future of Legal Marijuana in America. It is published by Time Books. Bruce Barcott, thank you very much for spending time with us and sharing your knowledge on the subject. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Weed the People. It's published by Time Books. Bruce Barcott is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.